actions. And now you're learning that the actions and choices you made before make a difference in your life now. I kept telling you about this, and you kept not listening to me. Well, now you have to deal with it. So deal with it. You could have told me a little harder, I said, and poked at my dinner. Mom sighed. Benji, sweetheart, I told you almost every single day of your life. And you did that smile and nod thing you do when you decide you're hearing something that doesn't apply to you. You can't tell someone something if they don't want to listen.
Uh-huh, I said.
Look, Mom, Cindy said. He's got that face on again. On the way to the Arnold Tower the next day to start the first job of the rest of my life, I saw what looked like a protest at one of the entrance gates to New St. Louis. Do you know what that's about? I asked my podmate, an older man. He looked over at the protest as we glided by and then shrugged.
Some of the folks from the wilds have been demanding we help them out with their food crisis, he said.
There's a food crisis? I asked. The guy looked over to me.
It's been in the news lately, he said pointedly.
You got me, I said. I haven't been watching the news. The guy motioned out toward where the protest had been.
Yeah, drought is bad this year, worse than usual. Outside of the cities, there's been a run on staples and prices are up. Someone's been telling the folks in the wilds that we've got food surpluses and technology to increase food yields, which is how we got the surpluses. So we get protests every morning.
Do we have food surpluses? I asked.
No idea,
the man said and went back to his reading.
I looked back in the direction of where I saw the protest and wondered what it was the protesters were doing, or not doing, that they could take time out of their work schedules to protest on a daily basis. About 2 seconds after that, I recognized the irony of me, who was going to his first job more than a year after most of my class had gotten their first jobs, wondering how other people could be slackers. A minute later, I was at the Arnold Tower. I walked over to the receptionist. Benjamin Washington, I said. I'm here to start work. The receptionist eyed me up and down. Oh, honey, she said. You shouldn't have worn good clothes. She shooed me away to sit down and picked up her phone. Shortly thereafter, a door opened and a very dirty man came out of it. He looked around until he saw me.
You Washington?
He said.
Yeah, I said.
Well, come on, then, he said.
I got up and followed him. He smelled terrible.
Nichols,
he said as we walked down the corridor, by way of introduction. He glanced at my clothes.
Tomorrow you should probably dress more casual, he said.
I thought we might have uniforms, I said, nodding at Nichols' blue uniform. I was trying to keep my distance from him. He was beginning to make me gag.
We have coveralls, he said, but the smell still gets into everything. You don't want to be wearing anything nice around here,
he glanced down.
You'll probably want to get boots, too.
Boots, casual clothes, got it, I said. We approached a pair of doors. Anything else?
Yeah,
Nichols said.
Nose plugs.
He opened the doors, and a wave of stink rolled over me, and I very nearly threw up my breakfast. Instead of retching, I looked out into the vast room the doors open onto. There were pigs on almost every square inch of it. Pigs eating, pigs sleeping. Pigs milling about, pigs farting, pigs pooping, pigs generally making astounding amounts of stink. And my job was to look after them. That's what Biological Systems Integration Manager meant. Pig farmer.
Welcome to your new job, kid, Nichols said to me. You're gonna love it here.
I kinda doubt that, I said.
You're stuck here, Nichols said. Might as well learn to enjoy it. Now come on. It's time to get you set up, take you to meet the boss.
Lou Barnes, my new boss, pointed at a carved plaque on his wall.
You know what that means?
He asked me. I looked at the sign, which read, Utere nihil non extra quiritationem suis.
I don't know Spanish, I said.
It's Latin, Barnes said. It means, use everything but the squeal. People used to say about pigs that you could eat every part of them but the squeal.
He waved toward the plate glass window that overlooked an entire different floor of pigs than I saw earlier. Arnold Tower had 20 stories, and every story had thousands of pigs in it, or so Nichols told me on the way up to Barnes's office.
The pigs you see here are a fundamental part of the zero-footprint ecological ethos of New St. Louis. When you toss your dinner leftovers into the food recycling chute, they're sterilized, fortified, and brought here as part of the pig's diet. In return, we get manure, which we send to the agricultural towers and to the test gardens on the top of the tower. We get methane, which we collect and use for fuel. We get urea from the pig's urine, which we use to make plastics. We recycle the plastics when we're done with them. Around and around it goes.
We make plastic from pig pee? I said. I knew about manure and methane, but this was a new one on me.
Urea's a bulking agent,
Barnes said, and when I gave him a look that indicated I hadn't the slightest idea what he was talking about, changed tracks.
Yes, plastic from pig pee. You got it.
I suppose we get pork chops from them as well, I said. Barnes made a face.
No, he said, not these pigs.
He waved out at the floor again.
These pigs are genetically engineered to maximize output of end products.
I tried not to go to the next logical place and just couldn't avoid it.
You've produced prodigiously poop-tastic pigs, I said with as straight a face as possible.
Barnes gave me a tight-lipped smile.
Laugh it up, Washington, he said. And while you're laughing it up, remember that all this pig shit and pig piss is part of the reason New St. Louis isn't on the verge of economic collapse or starvation, like most of what's left of our suburbs, and Missouri and Illinois.
I thought back on the protest I saw outside my pod window on the way in and sobered up a little. Barnes seemed to approve.
Look, Washington, I know why you're here, he said. You screwed around in school, got crappy aptitude scores, and this wound up being the only job you could get. Am I right about that?
Sort of, I said.
Sort of, Barnes repeated. I know you think this is a dead-end job below your dignity, but what you need to understand, Washington, is that if anything, it's you who have to step up.
He jerked a thumb back to the pigs.
I don't suppose you know that those pigs are part of the technology outreach program your mother and some others on the council are trying to push through.
Pigs count as technology? I said.
These pigs do, Barnes said. The same genetic improvements you are joking about are what make them valuable. They're exceptionally efficient processes of urea and other valuable elements, and we've improved their already considerable intelligence enough that they actually know where to go to get rid of their waste.
It took me a minute to process this. You mean they're potty trained? Barnes motioned to the window.
Look for yourself, he said.
I walked over to the window and stared out at the pigs. At first, I had no idea what I was looking at, except for lots of pigs wandering around. But then I started to see it. Trickles of pigs flowing into marked-off areas with graded floors. When they got there, they would let fly and then wander back out when they were done. Does someone have to teach them to do that? I asked.
At first someone did, Barnes said, but these days they teach each other.
I looked back at him.
They're teaching each other things?
I looked back at the pigs.
And you're not worried about a piggy revolution or anything?
It's not Animal Farm, Barnes said, and it's not like they're teaching each other calculus. But now you understand why these pigs are valuable.
What do you think of my mom's technology outreach thing?
I asked Barnes. I know you're not supposed to talk politics with your boss, much less on your first day on the job, but I was curious. Barnes shrugged.
I'm sympathetic, he said. People out there aren't starving yet, but they're getting close. No one's going to eat these pigs. Well, they shouldn't, at least. But they can help with crop production and the production of biodegradable plastics, but...
And here Barnes looked at me significantly.
The reason it works here in NSL is that we actively manage it. It's a closed loop, zero footprint. Everything gets recycled, nothing gets wasted.
We use everything but the squeal, I said.
That's right, Barnes said approvingly. Not just here, but all over New St. Louis. Now, you give the same technology to people who aren't managing the system, who don't believe in that sort of zero footprint philosophy, and all you're going to do is make things worse.
He nodded out to the pigs again.
These guys are great for us, but they're like any crop or animal that humans have messed with, either by old-fashioned domestication or modern genetic engineering. They have to be managed.
Put a bunch of pigs designed for high outputs of urea and nitrates into an open system, with their waste flowing into streams and seeping into groundwater, you'll have a goddamn mess on your hands.
Your mother is right, Washington. We need to help the people outside of the city, but we have to do it right, because they've already messed things up badly enough that they can't afford another screw-up.
Neither can we.
That's why we haven't given the technology to anyone else yet. The genetics of these pigs is still a state secret,
which is another thing you need to know.
And here I thought I was just going to be a high-tech pig farmer, I said.
Well, you are, Barnes said. Make no mistake about that, Washington. It's just that pig farming is a lot more important than you thought it was. And that's why I'm hoping your shitty aptitude scores are more a reflection of you farting around than you actually being stupid. If you're an idiot, I can find jobs for you to do. But if you're not an idiot, I can actually use you.
I'm not an idiot, I said.
I'd like to believe that, Barnes said.
We'll see. In the meantime, we'll start you on vacuum detail.
It's simple,
said Lucius Jeffers, who was the head of the four-man work detail I was assigned to on the fifth floor of Arnold Tower.
Whenever you see some shit or piss on the floor, you suck it up with this.
He waved the business end of a vacuum tube at me.
The mess goes into the tub here, and when the tub is full, you drag it over to a waste port at either end of the floor.
He motioned to one of the waste ports, which looked a little like the fire hydrants I saw in old children's books.
Attach the tube to the waste port, switch the unit from the vacuum to the expel setting, and let it empty out. Lather, rinse, repeat.
I looked at the vacuum unit doubtfully.
I thought these pigs were toilet trained, I said.
They are, Jeffers said. But they're also pigs, you know? Sometimes they just let fly. We tried training them to use the vacuum to pick up after themselves. It didn't work.
You really tried that? I said. Jeffers smiled.
You're going to be a lot of fun, Washington. I can tell that already. All right, off to work with you. You can start with that pile of crap over there.
He pointed to a fresh leaving on the floor.
Try to get to them before the other pigs start walking through them, he said, and left.
And then off I went, sucking up crap.
After an hour or so of doing this, I noticed that one of the pigs was following me around, usually about 5 feet behind me wherever I went. The porker was on the smaller side and seemed to be grinning at me whenever I looked at it. I asked Jeffers about it at lunchtime.
Yeah, they do that sometimes, Jeffers said. The biologist made them smarter than the average pig, so now they're a little curious about us. Pinter here?
Jeffers pointed at one of the other guys on the crew.
He had a sow follow him around for months.
I think she was in love.
It wasn't love, Pinter said between sandwich bites. We were just good friends.
Yeah, right, Jeffers laughed and turned back to me.
Sal was probably just looking for a little action. They don't let these pigs breed normally.
What do you mean? I asked.
You'll find out after lunch, Jeffers said.
After lunch, I was taken to the love lounge, filled with silicone pig-sized objects. I looked at Pinter, who had taken me to the lounge.
Tell me these aren't what I think they are.
They are exactly what you think they are, Pinter said. We bring in a bunch of male pigs, fill the air with scent of a sow,
he pointed at what looked like a fire sprinkler on the ceiling,
and then the boys go to town. After they're done, we suck out the leavings, send them down to cryo for storage, and then clean out the love toys with an injection of soap and hot water.
You have got to be kidding, I said.
I just ate.
It's not so bad, Pinter said.
Come on, you get into the control booth. You don't want to be in here when the boys come in. Once they get the sow scent into their nose, they're not exactly discriminating.
I got into the control booth as quickly as I could.
Okay, Pinter said. Ready?
He pressed a button, and the sprinkler fizzed to life, coating the love dolls. Then the far door slid open, and a small pack of randy pigs trotted in.
Oh, God, I said a minute later. That is so not right.
Make him bacon,
Pinto said, and looked at me.
Well, half of it anyway. What would that be? Bake or con?
I think there's something wrong with you, I said.
Pinter shrugged.
You get used to this place after a while, and it's not so bad working here once you do. I listen to my husband complain about his work day every single damn night. He complains about work, about his co-workers, and about his boss. I'm about ready to strangle him.
Pinter pointed out to the pigs who were now winding down. They were not the long-lasting sort, apparently.
I wouldn't say his job is glamorous.
That's a good thing, I said.
But on the other hand, I don't have to go home and whine to him about my day at work, either. Pigs are easy. People are hard. You learn to appreciate it after a while.
I'm not entirely sure about that, I said.
Well, if you don't like it, you can always take your aptitudes again and do something else with your time,
Pinter said, as the door to the Love Lounge opened and the pigs trotted out.
I like it fine. Now come on.
We gotta collect this stuff while it's still hot.
I swear to you, I never thought I would be so glad to get back to vacuuming up pig crap. And sure enough, once I started up again, there was the little pig again, trotting behind me.
Hello,
I said finally when I stopped to drain the vacuum and the pig parked itself to watch.
I think I'll call you Hammy. Or how about Pork Chop? Or maybe Mr. Bacon? Or just plain lunch? What do you think about that?
The pig snorted at me as if acknowledging my choices.
Great, I said. First day on the job and I'm already talking to the pigs. Shoot me now.
Lunch snorted again. The vacuum suddenly chugged to a stop.
What the hell?
I said. The vacuum was still half full. I pulled my phone from my coverall pocket and called the Arnold Tower number for Jeffers.
Something's wrong with my vacuum unit, I said. It stopped working and it's half full. Let me check on this end,
Jeffers said.
It's not your vacuum unit, he said after a minute. You've got an embargo situation.
What the hell is an embargo situation? I said.
It means there's some sort of clog in the piping,
Jeffers said.
Your vacuum unit shut down because if it didn't, you'd be spilling pig shit all over yourself right about now.
What do I do now? I asked.
Now, I'm going to need you to do a diagnostic on that particular drainage tube,
Jeffers said.
There's a diagnostic panel for the tube hardwired into its terminus, which is in the tower sub-basement C.
Why can't I access the panel on my phone? I said. Why can't you?
This is an old building, kid,
Jeffers said.
One of the first built in New St. Louis. The diagnostic system is a legacy from back in the day. Just go down there and check it out, okay? Go to the lobby and switch elevators. You have to take a special elevator down to the sub-levels.
5 minutes and one elevator transfer later, I was in sub-basement C. Even after a full day of walking around pigs and their smell, the fumes down there were something special. On a shelf facing the elevator was a set of breathing masks. You need this, said a weathered sign, followed by another equally weathered sign with the fine print about why the masks were needed. I didn't need the fine print. I was getting near woozy from the fumes even before I slipped the mask over my head. After a couple of deep breaths, my head cleared and I walked into the sub-basement, which seemed to be the top floor for several massive conduits into which the drainage tubes from all the various floors of the Arnold Tower drained.
You're going to want to open the access port to conduit 2,
Jeffers said.
Don't worry, it's automatic. No heavy lifting. Just walk on top of the conduit and hit the open switch.
It's going to be a river of crap in there, I said.
No, there's not, Jeffers said. Whenever there's an embargo situation, all the other drainage tubes freeze and the conduit empties out because they know someone has to go and check out the diagnostic panel. It's going to smell like hell, but you have your mask on, right?
I got to the access port and lugged the switch over to open.
It's been decades, kid,
Jeffers said.
The person who designed it is probably dead by now. Come on, Washington. Crap is piling up. We don't have all day.
I carefully put myself on the access ladder coming down from the port and stepped down. There was recessed, sealed-off lighting at the top of the conduit, so at least I could see. The conduit itself wasn't exactly clean, but it was drained as promised. Despite that, the residue on the curved floor of the conduit made me careful how I placed my steps.
"Where am I going?"
I asked.
"You're looking for the third... No, wait. The fourth tube junction on your left,"
Jeffers said. I counted off the tube junctions and then stood in front of the fourth one on the left.
"Where's this diagnostic panel?"
I asked.
"It should be there,"
Jeffers said.
"They're small. It might be covered in gunk. Stand closer."
"I am closer," I said. "I'm standing right in front of the tube, and I'm not seeing anything."
"You're sure you're in front of the right tube?"
Jeffers asked.
"I can count,"
I said.
"Hey, Washington,"
Jeffers said.
"What?"
I said.
"Embargo lifted,"
he said. Then I heard the rumbling and the laughter from the other end of the phone. I looked at the tube and had just enough time to think, "Oh, shit," before what I thought became a reality. 10 minutes later, I was in the Arnold Tower locker room, standing under a showerhead, fully clothed, glowering at Jeffers, Pinter, and the other members of my work detail, who were mostly on the floor, laughing so hard that they couldn't breathe.
"I will remember this," I said.
"We know,"
Jeffers said, and hooted so long he fell off the locker room bench. Around this time, Lou Barnes strolled through the locker room and stopped to get a look at me.
"Don't tell me," he said. "You fell for the embargo trick?"
"Oh, God, oh, God,"
Pinter said.
"Please don't make me laugh anymore. Please, God, no."
And then he laughed some more.
"You know they do this to everyone the first day," Barnes said.
"Think of it like a baptism." "Praise the Lord,"
Jeffers said from the floor.
"It just means you're one of us now," Barnes said.
"Great," I said.
"Oh, it's an honor if you think about it," Barnes said.
"Really?"
And then he busted out laughing too, which made all the rest of them laugh some more.
"I will remember this," I said to Jeffers once he finally managed to peel himself off the floor.
"Oh, kid,"
Jeffers said, wiping a laugh tear from his eye.
"We wouldn't have it any other way."
I noticed a funny thing on the pod ride back home, which was that someone would get in the pod with me and then get off a stop later. This happened 3 times before the door slid open and Leah popped her head in.
"Trust me, Leah. You want to take the next pod," I said.
"What's that smell?" she said.
"It's my job," I said. "It stinks."
"Hey, you have a job,"
she said, and came in to give me a hug. The door slid closed behind her.
"Now you're in for it," I said.
"I think I can handle the smell of an honest day's work," she said, and then gave her destination to the pod. We started off.
"I mean, I hope you won't smell like this at the end of every day, but, you know, first days are always stressful. Now, what's the new job?"
"Pig farmer," I said.
"Normally, I'd tell you to stop kidding around, but given how you smell at the moment, I'm willing to believe it,"
Leah said.
"Oh, believe it," I said. I told her about my day.
"It could be a positive," Leah said. "It's like an initiation right into the tribe. If they didn't like you, they would have just said goodnight to you at the end of your shift."
"So when you started your job, did your co-workers do something like this?" I said.
"No," Leah admitted. "They took me out for a drink, but they don't have access to pig droppings either." "I'm not sure I agree 100% with your tribe initiation theory," I said.
"In that case, stick with it and get them back,"
Leah said. We were coming up to our stop. "Because you now have access to pig droppings, too." "That's a very good point," I said. "And here all this time, I was thinking you were a nice girl, Leah."
"I am a nice girl," Leah said. "I'm just not a pushover."
Later at home, Mom opened the door a crack while I was in the shower. I was using the gray water because I was wanting a real long soak, and after my day, whining about gray water just seemed kind of stupid.
"Cindy told me about your day at work," Mom said through the door.
"Did she tell you I rubbed her face in my shirt after she called me a stink pig?" I asked.
"That was how I found out," Mom said. "I told her I was going to let it slide this time. Do you want to have me talk to your supervisor about it?"
Since my supervisor was one of the people laughing his ass off about it, I don't think it would do much good, I said.
Well then, his supervisor, Mom said.
I thought you said you weren't going to fight my battles for me anymore, I said.
Having your kid drenched in pig shit changes things, Mom said,
and I realized she must be really pissed, because she hardly ever swore in front of me or Cindy. I laughed.
What's so funny?
Mom asked. Never mind, I said. I turned off the shower and grabbed a towel and wrapped it around my waist. Then I opened the door all the way and gave my mom a big, sloppy hug.
Ah, damn it, Benji, my blouse,
Mom said.
Sorry, I said. And thanks for wanting to stick up for me. But you said it yourself. I'm an adult now. I can handle this on my own, okay?
You sure? Mom said. Oh, I'm sure, I said.
And so the days and weeks started to go by. At work, I still did menial vacuuming and love lounge duties, as did everyone else. But slowly, I was shown the other parts of the pig trade, from handling feed and water trade to helping the Arnold Tower vets with the vaccinations and their medical rounds. I learned how to handle Arnold Tower's securities and diagnostic systems, which, in fact, could be handled remotely by phone once I was given my access codes. I proved to be a quick study with the computer systems, and because of it, I was put in the rotation for late-night shifts, when it was just me, a couple of members of the administrative area janitorial staff, and thousands upon thousands of sleeping pigs. Late-night shift workers were exempt from the solo surcharge on the pod system, and sometimes I took advantage of that to take the long way around New St. Louis, cruising over the streets at night, watching my hometown slide by silently. Outside the city, the drought that threatened in the early months of the year delivered with a vengeance, drying up croplands all over the American Midwest and in the lower part of the Canadian Corn Belt. Mom was having a difficult time selling the rest of the NSL Council on technology outreach, but managed to convince them to make an emergency release of food surpluses to the surrounding suburbs and the wilds. The generosity of the gesture seemed to be lost on the people in the wilds, since NSL was accused of holding back on what it could have given, and the protests on our doorsteps got bigger and louder. This frustrated Mom, and enraged a fair share of new Louis. I was annoyed myself. About 10 weeks after I had my embargo event, Jeffers and Pinter were preparing to herd their boys into another session in the Love Lounge, when an apparently random computer glitch locked them out of the control room and then cycled through the session, spraying them with swine-tuned aphrodisiac just as the door slid open to admit a fine selection of very horny pigs. If the door to the control room hadn't randomly unlatched a couple of minutes into the session, Jeffers and Pinter might have found themselves porked into oblivion. A routine check of the systems after the event found no tampering and no reason why the system would have behaved like that. Barnes ordered the software reloaded, and everyone was given new security codes into the system. A week after that, protests at the city border finally turned bloody as a small group of Wilds folks attacked the NSL police force, seriously wounding one of them when a rock dented his skull. I saw this particular protest from above as I slid into work. If it wasn't an actual riot, it was practicing to become one. The NSLPD told the Executive Council it didn't have enough officers to handle the growing crowds. The council, over the strenuous objections of my mother, contracted with Edgewater for border control. After that, the protest crowds got larger, but they also stayed mostly under control. The rumor was that the Eddies got paid bonuses on a quota basis and were just looking for someone, anyone, to get out of line. I asked my mom if the quota bonus rumor was true. She looked at me and told me that now would be a great time to change the subject. Shortly thereafter, Cindy completed all her education requirements, got her certificate, and took her aptitudes. She scored high enough on them that she qualified for New St. Louis's executive training, which meant she was now on a fast track to be an administrator either here or in another city we shared open borders with. Despite myself, I was really proud of her. As for me, I got a promotion, of sorts. Arnold Tower had a lorry it used to transfer pigs or other things from our tower to Wilbur Tower or Pippo Tower, the other two non-meat pig towers in New St. Louis, and the driver of the lorry had slipped while stepping out of the cab and broken his leg.
While he was on desk duty, I was assigned temporary driver. I spent part of my day on the actual roads of the city, which beat vacuuming up shit. One day, as I was driving along, I saw Leah and Will standing on the street corner waiting to cross. I honked as I went past, which delighted Leah and confused Will, which seemed about right in both cases. Sometimes I took lunch with me on the trips. He sat up front with me, seemed to enjoy the ride. As bad as the protests were here, they were worse in other places. In California, the Malibu enclave was nearly burned to the ground when protesters there started fires in the canyons and pushed the fire line right to the border of the enclave. A lucky shift of the wind let firefighters save the enclave. Other parts of Malibu were not as lucky. When the protesters came back, they put the blame for the fires on the enclave. Edgewater, which had a contract with Malibu, just like it did with New St. Louis, saw a lot of its people get bonuses that night. The protesters saw their people go into the Eddie's holding cells or the hospital. Despite the rising tensions, Mom kept hammering away at her technology outreach program, trying to convince the other executive board members that time was running out. It was already too late to have the outreach be any use for this year, she said, but next year we're going to see the same thing happen again, and the year after that, and the year after that. But it wasn't doing her any good. Opinions were hardening against the Wilds, which looked more like anarchy than anything else these days. Eventually, even Mom gave up and tabled the outreach program until after the elections. Her opponent, who, as it turned out, was distantly related to Will's dad, had been gaining ground on her, mostly by hammering on her for wanting to do outreach to the same people who were rioting on our borders. He didn't seem to have any other platform, but at the moment, he really didn't need any other platform. And even though I'd been opposed to the technology outreach program, I was sorry for my mother that something she cared so much about couldn't get a fair hearing. On the first day of autumn, as I pulled a night shift, I invited Leah to the experimental gardens on the roof. We brought lunch along for security purposes.
It's beautiful up here, Leah said.
I'm glad you like it, I said. Thought you might want to see it before all the leaves fell off.
Why are they called the experimental gardens? She asked.
The plants up here are genetically engineered, I said. The botanists share the genetics lab with the geneticists who work on the pigs. The lab takes up the whole 20th floor, actually. Common rabble like us aren't allowed in there, but they let us come up here on our breaks and during lunch. I come up here with lunch all the time. Well, lunch the pig, I mean. For lunch, you know. I think I'll stop talking now.
Leah smiled, which is a pretty thing in the moonlight. I think it's adorable you have a pet pig, she said. I wouldn't use the word pet around him, I said. He's his own pig. We just happen to be friends.
Well, fine, Leah said. I think it's adorable you have a pig for a friend.
Are you happy now?
I'm getting there, I said,
and even in the moonlight I could sense her blushing a little. Leah was still with Will, and she wasn't the sort of girl who would let something like that slide even for a minute. But it wasn't a secret to her that I still wish she was with me. And I didn't see much point in pretending that I felt any other way than I did.
You can let people know how you feel about them without seeming desperate.
Or at least, that was what I was hoping.
I like where you work, Benji, Leah said after a minute. You're only saying that because I haven't taken you to sub-basement C, I said. Let me give you the embargo treatment and we'll see what you think then.
Leah laughed. I think I'll pass on that, she said.
Chicken, I said.
She smiled again and reached down to pet lunch. He snuffled at her.
One of our phones rang. It was Leah. She stepped away and took the call. A minute later, she came back holding the phone in front of her.
Here, she said. It's for you.
I took the phone. Hello? I said.
Benji, Will said on the other end of the line. I have a favor to ask of you. A real big favor. It's Marcus, Will said when I met him and Leah for lunch the next day. I haven't seen him in nearly 3 years. We email a little and talk about what's going on, but he's always somewhere that's nowhere near here. Then he calls yesterday, actually calls, and tells me he's in St. Charles and he wants to see me. He said there's a rave he'll be at out there tomorrow and gave me directions and the time, so I know where he'll be and when he'll be there. I just don't have a way to get there.
I squirmed in my seat.
Will asking me to take the Arnold Tower lorry to drive him to see his brother out in the wild was bad enough, but asking me to take it to a rave edged on the insane.
I don't understand, I said.
Just requisition a car from the city. It'll put a hole in your energy budget for the month, but it's your brother. He's worth it.
I tried that, Will said, and he let his irritation creep into his voice. Maybe you're not keeping up with current events, Benji.
But we've got a daily near riot right outside the city. The city's not letting people take their ground cars out into that. It gets stripped before they get to the interstate. Jesus, you're clueless sometimes.
Will, Leah said.
Will held up a hand. I know, I'm sorry, Benji. It's just that I haven't seen Marcus in so long, and I have no idea when I'm going to get to see him again. You know how important he is to me.
The hell of it was, I did know.
Long ago, before we decided we actually really didn't like each other, Will and I were friends, and I hung out with his family. Will idolized his older brother. He was crushed when Marcus blew off his aptitudes and ended up out of the city. It was why I knew how to poke him in that particular soft spot whenever I felt like he had gone too far.
Look, Benji, Will said, I know we haven't been friends in a long time. I know we don't get along. I know you resent me.
He stopped before he could actually say, for being with Leah, and chose something else instead.
I know you resent me for a lot of things, and I know I've treated you like crap. If you said no to this, no one would say I didn't deserve it. But I'm asking you just this once, for a favor. I can't get a car to get out to St. Charles, but you can. Your lorry can get through the gates and get back. You don't even have to stop at the gates like regular cars do, because the lorry has a signature transponder in it, right?
You've thought this through, Will, I said.
It's my brother, Benji, Will said. I want to see him. Help me.
Please. I looked at Will, and then I looked over at Leah, who was keeping a very carefully neutral expression on her face. But I knew what she wanted me to say, and I knew what I was going to say, because I knew what Leah would want. It takes a special kind of pathetic loser to help someone you hate just to make his girlfriend happy, I thought. There was more to it than that, I knew, but at the moment that's exactly what it felt like.
Let me see what I can do, I said. I can't promise anything. The same restrictions that are out there for ground cars might be there for city lorries too. And if there are, I'm not stretching my neck out for you, Will.
It's not like I have a whole lot of job options available to me at this point. Okay?
Okay. Will said, and looked like he was going to cry.
Thank you, Benji. Really. I'm not going to forget this.
Thank you, Benji, Leah said.
You're welcome, I said, looking at her and then looking at him. You're both welcome.
Here's the deal with the lorry, Barnes said to me. I'm not saying yes, but I'm not officially saying no. All of us have unofficially borrowed that truck from time to time. As far as I'm concerned, it's one of the perks of the job. A little something to make up for having to work in pig grab all day long. That said, if you take it out and something happens to it, then officially you're screwed, and there's nothing I'm going to be able to do to dig you out of that hole. So don't run it into a tree or hit a deer or let anyone set fire to it. Got it?
I got it, I said.
What do you need it for, anyway? Barnes asked.
I'm taking someone to see his long-lost brother in St. Charles, I said.
Sheesh, that's not a trip I'd want to take these days, Barnes said. There must be some friend.
It's not a friend, actually, I said.
I'm confused, Barnes said.
His girlfriend, I said. My ex, still hold a candle, and so on.
Ah, Barnes said. Well, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, but that's gotta suck for you.
It really sort of does, I said. Barnes clapped me on my back and headed off.
The next night, late, Will and Leah and I rolled out of New St. Louis and took the bumpy city streets of Old St. Louis until we found a suitable on-ramp to Interstate 70 heading west. The interstate was not exactly what you would call in brilliant condition these days. The U.S. federal government's list of priorities was getting smaller and smaller, and the interstate system had clearly not made the most recent cut.
But it was workable as long as you didn't go too fast, and the traffic out to St. Charles from NSL was pretty much non-existent. So you actually have directions to where we're going, right, Will? I said. I had gotten to the I-70 on my own, and Will had been silent for all of the ride so far. Will pulled something out of his coat pocket and handed it to me.
Here, he said. I took it.
It was a pair of goofy-looking glasses.
What the hell are these?
I said.
Marcus had them sent to me, Will said. He had me stand at one of the gates where there wasn't a protest, and someone came up and gave them to me.
Who gave them to you? I asked.
It was just some guy, Will said. He said he'd been paid to Turk the package.
Put them on. I put them on. The lenses were clear and non-correcting. Do these do anything but make me look stupid? I asked.
You have to turn them on, Will said. There's a power switch on the rim of the lens.
I fumbled with the glasses in one hand until I found a slightly raised ridge. I pressed it. There was suddenly a bright orange three-dimensional arrow in my field of view, pointing down the interstate.
Whoa,
I said.
The lenses are supposed to superimpose images over the real world, Will said.
Well, it works, I said.
Marcus said they're from a company out of Switzerland. He said they're going to be huge in a few years, Will said.
That's great, I said. But am I supposed to follow this arrow or what? I was. When the arrow turned, I turned. Like what used to be a city park, which had gone to pot sometime in the not-too-distant past. In the middle of the park, lights flashed and music pulsed. We were at our rave.
What now? I asked, once we'd gotten out of the lorry and I'd clicked on the security settings.
Do you still have an arrow in your glasses? Will asked.
Yeah, I said. Let's follow it, Will said.
We wandered through the crowd for a few minutes, pushing our way through clots of dancers. From time to time I saw faces I recognized. There were a lot of new Louis at this particular rave in the wilds. I wondered how they found out about it and how they got there. But before I got to spend any real amount of time on it, the arrow in my glasses suddenly changed orientation and hovered directly over someone.
I think I found Marcus, I said to Will. But he was already pushing past me to hug his brother.
Leah trailed behind him. I stood in the middle of a bunch of dancers with a pair of incredibly dorky glasses on my head.
So, okay then, I said to no one in particular. You're welcome. No, happy to help. No thanks necessary.
I sighed and took off the glasses.
When I looked up again, Leah was standing in front of me.
Come on,
she said.
Marcus is asking for you.
She held out her hand. I took it.
As a kid, I remember Marcus towering over both me and Will. He was still as imposing as I remembered him.
Benjamin Washington,
Marcus said, and extended his hand. I shook it and compared my grip to his, despite myself.
I remember you very well. You were not quite so tall the last time I saw you.
I was 14 the last time you saw me, I said.
True enough,
Marcus said. We were standing in a rest area at the rave, with card tables and folding chairs around us. He motioned for the three of us to sit. We did. I could tell that Will was a little puzzled why his brother wanted to talk to me when he was around. I was wondering that myself.
Will tells me you waited until the last minute to take your aptitudes,
Marcus said. I glanced over at Will.
That sounds like something Will would tell you, I said.
I was curious why you waited,
Marcus asked.
I shrugged. I wanted to see some of the rest of the world first, I said.
Marcus smiled.
And did you see the rest of the world?
Some of it, I said, and listed the places I had traveled.
Ah, Marcus said. I see. You did see the world, but just the safe parts.
I don't know what you mean, I said.
You went to all the other hermetically sealed places on the map, Marcus said. All the other cities like New St. Louis. The zero-footprint, low-impact archipelago of New Age city-states that dot the globe. The ones that have cut themselves off from the rest of the world and think themselves virtuous for doing so. Do you think they are virtuous?
I don't know about virtuous, I said. I had no idea where Marcus was going with any of this.
I think right about now we're
trying not to starve like everyone else is about to.
Marcus tilted his head at this.
You knew Louis could help everyone not starve if you wanted to, he said. If I hear correctly, your mother tried to get New St. Louis to share some of its technology, but no one else was buying the argument. Why was that?
I think all the protests began to piss people off, I said. My mom got the city to give up some of its food surplus, and no one seemed grateful. I think that pissed people off, too.
It pissed me off,
Will said, trying to get into the conversation. Leah was silent, watching the three of us. Marcus smiled over at his brother, but kept talking to me.
I think what bothered people about that was that New St. Louis was giving the Wilds a fish rather than teaching them how to fish.
I don't follow you, I said.
Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, Marcus intoned. Teach a man how to fish and you feed him for life. Surely you've heard this saying. I'm saying that the people in the wilds know the difference between a fish and being taught how to fish. They resent being given the one when they need the other.
But the city didn't have to give them a fish at all, I said.
Of course not, Marcus said. That's the advantage of being a zero-footprint paradise, isn't it? You're whole unto yourselves. You can keep your own clockwork ticking while all the world is running down around you. But it's a lie. John Donne had the right of it when he said that no man is an island. No city is either, Benjamin. Your mother recognizes this, at the very least. That's why she's trying that outreach program of hers. Or tried, anyway, until she realized she had an election she needed to win. I recognized it. That's why I never bothered to take my aptitudes. That's why I let them come to my family's apartment, serve me that silly court order, walk me to the city gate, and shove that ridiculous credit card in my hand. They thought I was being expelled from paradise. I knew I was gaining my freedom. I wondered if you might have recognized it too, Benjamin.
Marcus cocked his head again.
But now I'm not so sure. And I wonder if that's not a pity.
I sat there for a second and then stood up.
I think I'm keeping you from catching up with your brother, I said, and then nodded to both Marcus and Will and walked off. Leah followed behind me a few seconds later.
What was that all about?
She asked. I swear to you, I have no earthly idea, I said.
I think Marcus was trying to tell you something, Leah said.
I know he was trying to tell me something, I said. I just don't know what it is, and I think it's pissing me off.
Leah looked like she was about to say something else, but then both she and I heard screaming coming from the dance area of the rave. She and I both looked over and saw what looked to be a really active mosh pit in the middle of it. But then a girl came weaving out into the light, holding her head while blood was gushing from a scalp wound, and I realized it wasn't a mosh pit after all. I pushed Leah back toward Will and Marcus.
Go get Will, I said. Tell him we're leaving now.
Leah stumbled back toward her boyfriend, and I turned back just in time to see two very large and scary-looking dudes coming right for me. I tried to wheel back and run, but one of them grabbed me and pushed me down. I cracked my skull on the ground. Things went real fuzzy after that. At some point, I felt someone turn me over and take out of my back pocket the case I had my ID in. If they were looking for money, they were going to be disappointed. I didn't have cash. I had an energy budget. I tried laughing at that, and it hurt so much, I passed out. Some indeterminate time later, someone hauled me up from the ground.
Name,
they said. I looked around for who was talking to me.
What?
I said.
Your name,
they said. He said, actually, since now I could tell it was a man.
Benji Washington, I said.
You're fine, he said. If you can remember your name, you're going to live. Are you missing anything? You have your wallet?
I fished in my back pocket and found the case I carried my NSL ID in. It was still there. Start fob to the lorry was still there, too. I must have hallucinated the theft. I looked over to who was talking to me and realized that he was an Eddie, an Edgewater guard, one of the guys who the city was hiring to keep the protesters out.
What happened?
I said. The guard snorted.
You got beat on is what happened. You knew Louis are dumb as hell, you know that?
Go out to a rave in the middle of the wilds, and then you're surprised when the kids out here start taking a crowbar to your heads. Let me give you a little tip, Townie. Kids out here in the wilds, they don't like you. If you give them a chance to crack open your skull, they're going to do it. You got it?
I got it, I said. I felt like I was going to throw up.
Good, the guard said. You're lucky we got tipped off to this thing, or you'd probably be in the hospital by now. How old are you?
20, I said.
Well, then you're an adult, and I don't have to drag your ass back into NSL, he said. Go home, kid. Stay home.
He wandered off. I bent over at the waist and threw up. Then I went looking for Will and Leah. I found them by the lorry. Leah came running up to me to check my head. I tried to wave her off.
You look like hell, Will said.
Thanks, Will, I said. I can always count on you for a good word. How's the lorry?
What do you mean?
Will said. I mean, did anyone smash it during the riot? I said. Will checked.
It looks fine, he said.
Great, I said, hobbling over to it. Then we're going.
Oh, I still have to look for Marcus, Will said.
Will, he's gone, Leah said. He disappeared as soon as the Eddie showed up.
He's still around here somewhere, Will said. I'm not going anywhere without him.
You can stay, Will, I said, but I'm leaving now and I'm taking the lorry with me. If you don't want to walk all the way back to town, you better get in the truck. Come on, Will, Leah said. It's time to go. Will looked extremely unhappy, but got into the truck cab. Leah followed. I hauled myself up into the cab and nearly threw up again doing so. I drove 25 miles an hour on the interstate all the way back. The Battle of New St. Louis took place a week later. The protesters at the gates of the city had a problem. They couldn't get into New St. Louis. The city was sealed in like a medieval fortress, with only a few entrances, all guarded. Try to get through a gate without an ID with a transponder chip, and you weren't going to go anywhere. Lose your ID, you were in a world of pain. I lost my ID once, and I had to sit through a battery of identification tests, even though my mother was on the executive board. The instant the city knew the ID was missing, they voided the transponder signal, so if anyone tried to sneak into NSL using that ID, they'd be immediately tagged as a criminal. It was a problem, if you weren't a new Louie. You couldn't get into the city without an ID. And if you stole an ID and tried to sneak in, they'd catch you. So if you wanted to sneak into New St. Louis, how would you do it? It turned out not by stealing the IDs, just the information in them. The rave had been the honey trap, an attractive place for bored young new Louis to be lured to out beyond the safe walls of the city. The rave allowed the conspirators close contacts with the city kids, close enough contact that the recording devices they carried could read and clone the new Louis' ID transponder signals. The riot afterward was an opportunity to crack heads, but also to snatch the ID information from a few extra people, like me. Since no physical IDs were stolen, no one reported any stolen identities. This made it easy for several dozen unauthorized people to walk right through the gates of New St. Louis. The conspirators were chosen to more or less resemble the people whose identities they had stolen, so if the gate guards were to glance down at their screens, they wouldn't notice anything out of the usual. But since the gate guards were busy dealing with the exceptionally heavy crowds of protesters that day, apparently no one really bothered to look. The IDs checked out as the people walked through. What else was needed? After the First World War, I learned this later, after the Battle of NSL, the French, fearing another attack by the Germans, built a massive set of fortifications called the Maginot Line, which would form an impenetrable line which the Germans would not be able to cross. The French were so confident in the Maginot Line that when they placed their big guns into it facing out toward Germany, they never considered the idea that at some point those guns might need to face in the other direction, toward France. This became a problem when the Germans invaded France by pouring through a gap in the Maginot Line and then were suddenly behind it and on their way to Paris. New St. Louis was built the same way. It was focused on keeping people out, not dealing with what happened when they got in anyway. This was why the city was not prepared when the attack came, from behind, inside the city walls. The attackers were smart. They didn't bother to attack the city's main gates.
the ones with the biggest number of protesters, NSL cops, and Edgewater guards. Instead, they picked one of the small, quiet entrances, one small enough to be quickly closed and sealed at the first sign of unrest by just a couple of guards, and therefore only covered by a couple of guards, who are easily dealt with by a couple dozen determined conspirators. With the guards taken care of, it was simply a matter of opening the doors and letting in the hundreds of people hiding outside. These hundreds were on the scene to do one thing and one thing only. Trash New St. Louis as hard and as fast as they could in order to draw the police and the Edgewater guards to them as quickly and as brutally as possible. They set to this work with a will, armed with bats, sledgehammers, and Molotov cocktails, setting fires and causing the sort of property damage that's not easily fixed. It worked. Within minutes of the destruction beginning, the police in Edgewater were swinging clubs and firing electric bolts and trying, and failing, to close the open gate that hundreds more were now pouring through. This was a feint, a distraction to keep the authorities occupied away from the real goal of the riot. And that was the agricultural towers, which by their very nature were open to the elements and undefended. Into these towers went dozens of invaders, intent not on filling their stomachs, but their gene samplers and seed bags, detailing a whole Eden of genetically improved, quick-growing, high-yield fruits and vegetables. Once these invaders had breached the agricultural towers, they were under no impression, even with the help of the staged riot, that they would make it out of the towers with their seeds and samples. Instead, they moved their way up the towers, sampling as they went, until they stood in the roof gardens of the towers. There, they welded the access doors shut, pulled open their backpacks, and clicked together the tiny remote-controlled airplanes they carried with them. Then they shoved their samples into the even tinier cargo holds and tossed the planes into the sky, carrying their trove of genes out past the city walls and into the waiting hands and sequencers of their compatriots on the other side. That done, the invaders sat down in the roof gardens and waited to see how long it would take for the few police and Edgewater guards who could be spared to deal with them to figure out they weren't actually planning to come down and make an escape. It took them a long time, more than enough time for the mastermind of the entire attack to get what he came for, completely unnoticed by law enforcement. I was working the night shift in Arnold Tower when my phone rang, and Lou Barnes was on the other end, telling me to lock everything down because New St. Louis was under attack. I did what I was told, and threw the switch that closed up the tower to everyone but qualified personnel and vehicles. If Barnes wanted to come in and take over, that would have been all right by me. I called the NSL police and reported the lockdown. The dispatcher on the other end asked me if anyone was attacking the building. I said no. She said I was on my own for the evening and hung up. 30 minutes later, the security system pinged me that the garage entrance was opening to let in the Arnold Tower lorry. I stared at this for a moment because I knew exactly where the lorry was parked. I flipped the security monitor over to the garage camera and saw no lorry, but instead, 4 people walking down the parking garage ramp. 2 were carrying bags. 1 was dragging another along. I looked at the 2 of them for a minute before I recognized who both of them were. I got very upset and started thinking very fast, as fast as I ever had in my life. My phone rang. I picked it up.
"I know by this time you can see me in your security cameras," Marcus Rosen said. "And so you know by this time who I have with me."
"I can see her," I said, looking at Leah.
"Good,"
Marcus said.
"Will told me that you still had a thing for her, and I suspect he was right. So I thought she might be a useful motivator. Now listen to me, Benjamin. I'm sorry you're the one I'm having to deal with right now, but that's just the way things are. If you cooperate, we can get through this quickly. I'm coming for some genetic samples of your pigs. It's all I want. We don't have to hurt them. All we have to do is take skin samples. It'll be simple, quick, painless, and at the end of it, you'll have your friend Leah back. Does this sound like a good deal to you?"
"It does," I said.
"Good," Marcus said again. "And here's the plan. I'm going to stay down here in the garage while my 2 friends here come up to where you are. You're going to take them to where they can get some samples, and then they're going to come back down. when they come back down, I'm going to let go of Leah. Do you think you can handle that?
I can, I said.
I'm glad we're handling this rationally,
Marcus said.
All right, I'm sending my friends up.
I'm unlocking the garage door, I said. Have them give me a couple of minutes, and then they can take the elevator to the fifth floor. I'll meet them in the floor lobby.
They're going in now, Marcus said.
5 minutes later, the elevator doors opened and two men got out. Hi, I said.
Take us to the pig floor, one of them said.
No, I said. The two looked at each other and then at me, unamused. I held up a hand. There's an entire floor of sleeping pigs in there, I said. If you startle or surprise them, they're going to come out of sleep freaked out, and then every pig around them is going to freak out, and then that's a few thousand pigs in a frenzy. I don't want to be responsible for you getting trampled. I pointed to a door at the